Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Public health experts have called for vigilance and early action as signs point to a possible new COVID-19 wave. Now, while countries that have entered their winter season struggle with conditions ripe for the spread of infectious diseases, what is the source of a possible new wave here in tropical Malaysia? And what steps have been taken to strengthen the response of health authorities? Our first guest tonight is Professor Dr. Sharifah Izzat Wan Putih. She's a health economy and public health specialist at Universiti Kebangsaan Malaysia. Dr. Izzat, we're reading about the headlines that talk about a new wave of COVID cases in countries with temperate climates, the seemingly obvious explanation for the surge of cases would be the weather there. But in our equatorial tropical climate, what is behind the concern of a possible new wave?
Right. Thank you very much. I think the possibility of a so-called a fourth wave would be actually very imminent, unless steps are taken to mitigate this activity. So the issue is that there's a lot of transmission going on from, we've had our MCO, which lasted nearly 2 years. It has been lifted. We have a lot of social and also economic events. There's also interstate activities. We are moving around so much. We are going back to work and all. So, of course, we try to be compliant with our SOPs, but we must address, because there's a lot of activities and a lot of movement. So this creates a lot of traffic and also a possibility of transmission. We've seen the results of that. Some of our states have increased R0, also called the transmissibility of more than one. So there's a possibility of another wave happening unless we really take care of our hygiene and also prevent our transmission from going on. I think the state and basically the government has done a lot of effort in trying to advocate a lot of SOPs and all. But it has to be responsible. We have to be responsible community and also adhere to the SOPs.
Right. So, Dr. Izzat, so we're putting aside the climate. We're putting aside new strains that also have led to spikes in the past. And you're looking specifically at the change in the way that Malaysians live now, because we're kind of returning to the old ways of living. So the question, I guess, would be that what is different now than, say, a year ago when the population wasn't as vaccinated or at all, a year ago, and now that we have high levels of vaccination, doesn't that change the consequence? So we might have more infections, but they might not be as severe. Is that true or not?
Right, you are correct in some of what you said just now. The different strain, when we started out, there was the so-called the Wuhan and also the Alpha strain, but there's a lot of changes now. There's a lot of new strains, the so-called the Delta variants. This is the one that has the most impact on the transmission. So we're not really sure how big is the problem in Malaysia. We've seen a lot of cases being detected, and we assume, looking at other countries, this would be, again, the dominant VOC in the country as well. So that actually creates a lot of... It's basically a game changer where, even though with our vaccination, basically in Malaysia, we have Pfizer, Sinovac and AstraZeneca, there's going to be changes in the effect of the immunity, but also how long does this immunity last? There's a lot of papers that say, we have waning immunity after 6 months and above for Pfizer and 3 months and above for Sinovac. So this is one of the reasons why we are actually promoting and encouraging people to go on for booster doses.
Right. And on that note, I'm glad that you brought up booster doses. We'll come back to, I guess, the nature of the concern behind the second wave. But I want to talk about booster doses in particular, because apparently the Health Minister, Kari Jamaluddin, said that 40% of people who are getting booster appointments are not turning up. They're not showing up for their jab. And I'm just wondering, in the early days when we were you know, the, when take up for vaccination wasn't as high, the first dose and the second dose of vaccination wasn't as high, there was all these concerns around vaccine hesitancy. I'm just wondering, do we understand what's behind the hesitancy of booster doses? Is it hesitancy? Is it reluctance? Or is it too busy or a lack of, you know, care about getting a booster dose? What do you think is behind this, Dr. Izzat?
Right. I think there's a lot of confusion in how we transmit the information as well. And I don't blame the community as a whole. You know, when we started out, we told everyone that we're going to achieve the herd immunity. This will be the end of our problems. And everyone will go back to their business once we achieve 90% or 80% of our herd immunity. So that has already happened. And rightly mentioned, the severity of the cases are supposed to go down. Unfortunately, for some reason or the other, we've got new evidence. We have to understand COVID is a new disease. So there's new evidence saying that, look, now we have another issue. We have new variants coming in. We have the Delta variant. We have the Mu variant. And we don't know what's the future going to hold, whether there's any new variants coming in or not. And in the end, the vaccine, which is quite novel, we don't know how long the immunity will last. Now, what has happened, the vaccine has gone on for about 2 years, and now we know that the vaccine, immunity wanes after time. So with that, we are worried about, another infection, and the infection may not only be less, but in certain people, you can get a breakthrough infection, even though you have been so-called completed your vaccination. And this is why we advocate for the booster vaccination for certain group of population. And in certain countries like probably Israel, China, they have actually done so-called mass vaccination, even for boosters. But in most of countries, they would actually advocate for certain groups of population. This would be the elderly, 65 and above, or in Malaysia would be 60 and above. But also the frontliners to actually take the boosters first. And also this is what's happening in Malaysia as well, where we try to encourage, of course, frontliners have to go first, but also the 60s and above, and also people with comorbidities, even though they are young, 18 and above, you should go for your booster doses as much as possible in Malaysia.
Dr. Izzat, do you think that many people understand their own health status? And I ask this because at the start of the pandemic, there was concern about protecting the most vulnerable. But it also seems that governments around the world, including in Malaysia, took the position that, you know, we had to, as it were, put everybody, healthy or otherwise, vulnerable or otherwise, you know, in a position of a kind of defensive position. So we shut down our society. Now that things are back, are we thinking about who is vulnerable? I mean, is everybody vulnerable, or do we still hold to the position that there's some groups that are more vulnerable, and therefore we can target them rather than targeting all of society?
Right. Very good question. I believe that it should be a targeted population. At the moment, what has been published everywhere and is that we are targeting people who are at higher risk, not only of contracting the disease, this would be the frontliners, but also at higher risk of getting severe disease, and this would be the elderly and also people with comorbidities and immunocompromised population as well. So this would be the first so-called or the group of population that we hope to get booster doses. But we don't really know what happens to the rest of the population if we don't give a booster dose. That means we don't know what's the rate of the breakthrough infections in Malaysia as well. Some studies have shown that, you know, example for different types of vaccination, example for Sinovac, you are encouraged to take another booster dose, probably from a different type of vaccine. This would be called the heterologous vaccination, or different jabs, basically. That means if you have taken Sinovac for your first and your second, and you are encouraged to take another different types of jab for your so-called booster dose. So it's not the third dose, because the third dose will be the same vaccine, but we are encouraging a different types of vaccine, which are so-called Pfizer. It would actually, from previous published literature, would say that this would actually boost your immune system better, and this would actually protect you longer. So this is what we advocate for our Malaysian population. a lot of confusion is still available, and we do understand that some people are still waiting for their Sinovac booster, which is not probably ready yet, and what has been approved is only Pfizer so far.
Right. And I think that's quite interesting because, you know, you do hear anecdotal evidence of people wanting to wait for that, probably behind us one of the reasons why, you know, many are missing of booster absenteeism. But before, in a couple of minutes that we have left, Tiza, I want to ask you, I mean, you said at the start of our conversation that you think that a new wave or a fourth wave is imminent. And I'm just wondering whether we've passed that threshold, whether what can we do to turn that around, whether in terms of as private citizens or from a public health response perspective. Are we doing enough?
I am quite worried about that because if we do not actually respond accordingly or effectively, we are going to see an increase of cases as well. And this is what something that we would not want to happen in Malaysia. So as in other countries, example, in Singapore, in other countries as well, they have put up their, it's not to say full-blown MCO, but they have put up a lot of curbs so that, you know, you basically lessen your chances of getting infected. So one is to adhere to the usual SOP, but basically to improve your distance between one another. When I say distance to one another, it means that you should not be congregating or have a lot of mass meetings where there's a lot of people in a closed space. So this sounds very simple, but once we go back to work, and if there are a lot of areas or possibility of this transmission going on, this would actually propagate the infection and going to come up with a few clusters. Clusters has happened, and a lot of them are contributed to work environment. When we say work environment, what happens at work is that we tend to, you know, linger and also mix around with a lot of our colleagues. But also when we mix around and eat together, it can be happening in the pantry, it can be happening in the canteen or restaurant. We tend to put off our mask. That means because we are eating together, and basically this is the, you know, one of the chance that you're going to transmit your infection to other people. Now, if you are basically have a very good immunity, your chances of getting another infection might be reduced, but you cannot just depend on your immunity. You have to prevent yourself by wearing proper masks, make sure that you not only wash your hands, but stay far apart to one another. So basically, we are doing the same thing that we have been taught when the outbreak basically occurred in the first place. Because we don't know who has it at this point in time. It's endemic, and a lot of us might be carriers. Even though you have been vaccinated, of course, the chances are higher for people who have not been vaccinated. That means it can be children, adolescents, and things like that, rather than people who have been vaccinated, to actually carry the virus forward.
Dr. Izzat, thank you so much for your time and your insights. We appreciate it. That was public health specialist Dr. Sharifah Izzat Wanputih from UKM. We're going to take a quick break here and consider this, but stay tuned. We'll be back with more. Hi, thanks so much for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. Now, experts have called for extra vigilance as signs point to a new COVID-19 wave, but can we stem the tide before it's too late? Joining us to discuss the necessary early preventative measures, we have Assistant Professor Dr. Farhan Rusli. He's a public health medicine specialist at International Islamic University Malaysia. He's also the director of the Selangor Task Force Operations. Dr. Farhan, how concerned are you about the possibility of a fresh new wave? And I'm just wondering because, you know, there's some, I don't want to be alarmist, but what are you watching and what's driving your concern?
Well, I think the first thing that we have to note why we think the fourth wave is imminent is to look at other countries where those people who've received the full dosages of their vaccinations, we can see that the trend of the breakthrough vaccinations are increasing. And these are in countries with mRNA vaccines. But the main population which are still filling up the hospitals are still the unvaccinated. However, we also note data coming in that the recipients of the Sinovac vaccines, after 3 months, we see that there's waning of the antibodies and it even drops down up to 28% protection. So we see that this compounding factors may increase the likelihood of a fourth wave. The thing is, it's not about whether we think it should happen or not, but rather we should prepare our healthcare services and assume that it will happen so that if it does happen, we are more than prepared for it.
Farhan, you know, it's been almost a year and a half now since the pandemic broke out, and it's very different now than it was, say, a year ago when we talked about a wave. It was terrifying then because we didn't have the vaccinations. And now we have not just one, but many types of vaccines. We also have therapeutic interventions. So Pfizer's talking about a pill and so on and so forth. So the range in the public health toolkit that wasn't there a year ago. Aren't we better off this time than we were a year ago? Is there any reason to be, hysterical or fearful to the point of panicking?
Well, I think number one, even from the very beginning, we should not have panicked or we should not have any sort of fear, but rather we should learn from the lessons that we have gone through for the past 1 year and make ourselves be prepared if there is an eventual wave that's coming. And this is what we call by preparedness. And in public health, you must understand that the basis is prevention than cure. So we do not want to be using the antiviral pills if somebody gets COVID. Rather, we want to prevent and stop the transmission from occurring in the first place. And in this context, what we should actually be addressing now is the importance of public health systems, the importance of conforming to SOPs, and the importance of making the people be responsible of their actions into limiting and reducing the transmission of COVID-19 in the community.
But Farhan, if I could just follow up, do our hospitals have those pills? Have they been bought? Are our medical boxes filled with these options in case we have another spike?
Well, I believe that the Minister of Health has made an announcement saying that he will be buying and that he has been placed in orders. Whether the pills are here right now, we are not sure because I don't know whether it's here or not. But what I can say is that it is going to take time, just like how the vaccines took time. It will take time for those things to arrive in our country as well, because I'm sure the other big countries, the other big economies have already bought these things much, much earlier than us. However, we learned from this mistake and we made it ahead of the game by putting in our deposit and buying into this early on, just in case if it works, then we're going to make sure that it is here in hospital. And I understand your concern, Sharad. If these pills are here, should we be concerned knowing that COVID can be treated and all this? Like I said, the science is still new. We are not sure that these pills can cure COVID wholeheartedly, or it can just reduce the risk. But what about the people who will be in ICUs? Can these pills help and all those things? There's still a lot of science to be learned here. And yet, this is why I think we should not put all of our eggs into one basket, thinking that we have solved the issue right now and we can just move on like how life was, thinking that we have the cure for COVID while we still
On that note, Farhan, you know, as you mentioned earlier about people being responsible for their own actions and, you know, compliance with SOPs, I'm just wondering, I'm curious about and interested in the behavioral aspect of stemming the possibility of a fourth wave. Because once again, we've let our guard down because we think we're, you know, vaccinated. We've been told the messaging has been around herd immunity, and we've been told how many percent of our population has been vaccinated. So I can't blame the large portions of society for letting their guard down, particularly as it seems we're reverting to a lifestyle before COVID. What would you say to everyone to make sure that we keep our SOP compliance up, our vigilance up? Particularly as it seems to be many of us are quite fatigued with the SOPs.
Well, I think this boils down to effective risk communication, because we ended up in the earlier parts of the pandemic promising things we did not know we could promise, saying that if we hit a certain certain number for herd immunity, we'd all go back to normal and everything was like that. But yet, you know, with the declining antibodies, with the declining efficacy after a certain period of time, it is as though those people with two shots of vaccines will be as though they have not completed their vaccinations yet. It'll just be as though they have taken only one shot. So this brings back this number down. And I think what people need to understand is that the risk is still there. And it is actually, the onus is on the government and the health sector to actually tell the people, look, you can still get sick. You can still die of COVID. We do not understand the signs fully. We are also learning as we go along. But this is what's happening right now. And this is what needs to be done. And I think this is the biggest bridge that we need to capture, Mel, because I think we've been making too many empty promises, and I think it's time we start delivering them. And the only way we can start doing that is by giving the right information to the people.
Farhan, our hospitals, as we've discovered, have been woefully underfunded for a very long time. Do you see any movement in that direction to address this issue, especially as preparedness would include strengthening our healthcare system?
Short answer, no. Well, the long answer will be, I think there are plans to enhance the public health sector, to enhance the hospitals in RMK12. But I think it's going to take time. And I think this is something which is a blessing in disguise, because we have so far, for so many years, we've neglected the public health sector. We've always put it on the back end. And we've always focused on just buying drugs, and not focusing on preventive care. And when you talk about the bed occupancy rate, even prior to COVID, it has always been 80%+. So when you tell me that the bed occupancy rate in the hospitals are now reaching a critical point of 95%, I think it's not something that's shocking to me, because it has always been full in the first place. And I think there's a lot of things, a lot of steps that needs to be taken, drastic actions need to be taken, to ensure that we're prepared in case we get a fourth wave or any other pandemic that comes along the way down the years.
Farhan, there's been reports that booster take-up has been quite low, that people are not turning up for their booster appointments. Can I ask you, for those listening who may be hesitant or reluctant or too busy to go and get their booster shots, what would you say to those who are maybe waiting for a booster shot of their choice or still having two minds about it? What would you say to them watching tonight?
Well, I think there's two things that we need to tackle here. Number one is if they can choose the booster of their choice, because the science shows that the mixing of doses actually increases the immunity. So we need to be transparent about this. Are we going to go down this line? Are we going to go through this method? And if we do, do we offer it to people? And I think it's only fair to give people choices into making informed decisions. And once we've done that, we can actually move on to the next step of ensuring that people take booster doses by making it compulsory, by making it, if you do not take your booster or your third dose, you are not considered fully vaccinated. So these are the steps that we move on. But if people are listening in and they're wondering whether they should take their booster doses or not, I think it should not be an argument. If influenza vaccines can be taken yearly, why are we shocked that we need a third dose for COVID-19? As you know, we are all learning about the science. We are all learning about the efficacy of the vaccine itself. So if we need COVID-19 vaccines every year, it should not come as a shock to anyone at all.
All right. Thank you so much for your time. That was public health medicine specialist Dr. Farhan Rusli wrapping up this episode of Consider This. Before we leave you tonight, a reminder that you can get the latest information on COVID-19 vaccines at astroawani.com as well as the Astro Awani app. I'm Alyssa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching. Good night.